Okay, we left off last week. We were just starting to talk about another one of the Takanas Chachamim to prevent us from violating Machwa Patish. So Chazal was very, very concerned lest we do anything that either resembles fixing or may lead one to fix something. And one of the examples that Chazal prohibited was the prohibition of Mashmiya Kol, any kind of musical instrument, any kind of causing sounds that's musically oriented, is included in this Gezeirah D'Rabbanan. When you start to play instruments, next thing you know, it may come to fix the instruments, that's going to be a problem. So the Mishnah and the Gemara, the very end of Masechet Erevin, discusses about this prohibition of Mashmiya Kol, when a person causes a noise to be made. What are the parameters of this issur? So there's one opinion in the Gemara that maintains that the only time this is usur is only if it's being done in a musical sense. So a person is banging as a tune or something, that would be a problem. It's just banging on the door to someone should open the door for him. So even though it's making a noise, that's not included in this issur. And there's another pending one that says, no, that even if it's not derech shir, even if it's not derech tune or rhythm or anything, it would still be prohibited. So we spoke a little bit about last week about what that issur would be about. It's hard to believe. What does that have to do with Mashmiya Kol? What does that have to do with Shemi San Kli Shir? So the Yosemech suggested that maybe that's a different issur. Maybe that's an issur of being molded, an issur of bringing something new into existence. So we spoke a little bit about the parameters of that issur last week. But the question is whether we pass like that. So how do we pass in halacha? Do we pass in like the view that Mashmiya Kol is across the border? So any and every time that I cause any device to make noise, so that's automatically an issur d'rabbanan and Shabbos. But I say no. The only time it's also is only when it's derech shir, and then it falls into the category of it's like playing an instrument, and then it's subject to the gzeirah d'rabbanan of Shemi Satin Kli Shir. So it's a machlokes in the Gemara in the end of the Talmud Bavli, Masechet Erevin. And the maskanas of Gemara seems to be lakula, would appear from the Gemara, that we pask in lakula, that there is no absolute, all-encompassing prohibition of the Rabbanan to make noise on Shabbos. So you can knock on the door to get in, but you can't knock to make a song, to make a rhythm. So even though that seems to be the maskanas of Gemara and the Talmud Bavli, the Yerushalmi disagrees. The Yerushalmi, in Masechet Erevin, comes to the conclusion that, in fact, it is usur, that it's usur under all circumstances, even with shelo b'derech shir. So on this machlokes, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi is machmir that all kind of music, all kind of noise is usur, and the Bavli concludes that it's only usur if it's derech shir. So here we find a fascinating discussion in the Rishonim, which goes way beyond the intricacies of this sugya. The riff in the end of Masechet Erevin quotes a tradition from the Gaonim. Now, what do you do when you have a stir between the Bavli and Yerushalmi? Very common, all the time. You have the Talmud Bavli says one way, and the Talmud Yerushalmi concludes another way. So how do you pasken? How do you know what the din is? So the Gaonim had a tradition that we follow the Talmud Bavli. Why do we follow the Talmud Bavli? So the Gaonim say, because the Talmud Bavli was Basroi, because it was written later. And therefore, the Amoraim in Bavel had access to what the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael said. The Talmud Yerushalmi was written primarily by the Talmid of Rabbi Yechonon. Rabbi Yechonon was a very early historically Amorim. He was from the youngest Talmidim of Rabbi Danossi. So you're talking about he was first generation Talmidim, was second, third generation of Amoraim. You're talking about fairly early on into the history of the Amoraim. The Talmud Bavli was composed significantly later, several generations later in Bavel. So the Chachmei Bavel, at the time they were putting together the Talmud Bavli, knew exactly what was going on in Eretz Yisrael. There was a lot of traffic back and forth. And the Gemara talks about all the time, Kiyosa Ula, Kiyosa Rabin, Kiyosa Ravdimi, Kiyosa Rabba Avua, Rabba Bachan, and there were a lot of Amoraim that were traveling back and forth from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. So the Chachmei Bavel were well aware of the traditions of the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, and some of those traditions they accepted, and some of them they disagreed with. So if the later Amoraim disagreed with the early Amoraim, they had a right to do so, and therefore we follow the Hilchos HaKebasroi. So even though the Rif quotes, there was one opinion of the Gaonim who maintained that we should be choshesh for the Rishami, and we shouldn't permit any kind of making noise on Shabbos and Yontif because of the Rishami's view. So the Rif rejects this in the name of the tradition of the Gaonim, but we follow the Bavli of the Rishami. Even though everybody agrees ultimately that we follow the Bavli of the Rishami, there is a little bit of a different nuance as to why that may be true. Gaonim said the reason is because of Hilchos HaKebasroi. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, in his Sefer, Kuntres Divrei Seifim, he wrote a Rabbi Chanan doesn't need my approval, but a beautiful, beautiful Kuntres, literally, put together a pieces about all the Koch of Chachamim and Losasur and Sanhedrin and with the Koach HaTorah and Amoraim, a very fascinating overview of different key aspects of Tosha Bapeh that's printed in Kayvet Shiur of Rabbi Chanan in the beginning of Chelik Beis. So in Kunjus Divrei Sofim, he talks about this reality in Pesach Halacha that the Chachmei Bavel win over the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, and he quotes in the Gaonim and the Rif. And then he says, near the line or another reason, based on what he thinks is perhaps the Sheikh said Rambam, that the Rambam describes in his Akdoma to Perishim Mishnayis that when the Chachmei Bavel, the Talmud Bavli, comes to his conclusions, it wasn't just a few Amoraim here and there who were just, decided, okay, halachic planning. That wasn't what happened. The Talmud Bavli was put together. Rabashi started it, and then Ravina, the next generation, a little bit right after that, they put the final touches on it. It was something that was agreed upon by the Rav Chachmei Yisrael, the overwhelming majority of the Talmid Chacham in the world at the time lived in Bavel and were basically housed in the two major yeshivas of Bavel at the time, of Sura and Pumbedisa. So the Rambam describes that psalkim and conclusions and diukim and anything that emanates from the Maskenas HaDvarim, the Talmud Bavli, is really Rav Chachmei Yisrael signing off on. It was something that was accepted by everybody. And everybody accepted, was eventually unanimously accepted as the final word of Torah Shema Peh. As the Rambam describes in great detail how ultimately the repository of the entire Chachmas HaTorah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu has seen the whole Torah Shema Peh. So the most authentic presentation of that Torah Shema Peh is ultimately the Talmud Bavli. That was what was accepted by Rav Chachmei Yisrael. So Rabbi Chanan suggests that anything that appears as the Maskanas of Talmud Bavli takes on the static like Beis Din HaGadol, like Sanhedrin, that normally the Sanhedrin are the representatives of the Chachmei Yisrael. You can't have every single Talmud Chacham voting and every single issue, you don't get anything done. So you have 71 Dayan who are the Shlichim, their representatives. They speak on the voice on behalf of all the Chachmei Yisrael. If you don't have a Sanhedrin, so then Rabbi Chanan explains, based on the Rambam, then the Chachmei Yisrael themselves have to come to bat, they have themselves have to vote. So when you didn't have a formal Sanhedrin anymore functioning, but at the end of the period of Talmud Bavli, so the fact that all the Chachmei Yisrael unanimously agreed to these halachas, that takes on the status of a Beis Din HaGadol. So Rabbi Chanan claims that kind of a haskamas advarim never really took place in the time of the Talmud Rishonim. The Talmud Rishonim was written in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't actually, it's a little bit of a misnomer. It wasn't written in Yerushalayim. It was written actually up in the north in Tiberia, but in Talmidim Rabbi Yochanan. And it was representative of a lot of great Talmid Chachamim, all the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. But at that time in history, Rav the Chacham didn't even live in Eretz Yisrael. Rav the Chacham at that time already lived in Bavel. So it was a work of tremendous importance put together by a group of Yechidim, great. We're not talking about not just a bunch of rabbis, Talmid Rav Yechim, talking about the greatest of the great. But at the end of the day, it was a work that didn't really have the input of the Chachmei Bavel. And as such, since it wasn't really representative of Rav Chachmei Yisrael, it had the status of a great piece of Torah work put together by great, great Talmid Chachamim, but it wasn't Rav Chachmei Yisrael, wasn't Kol Chachmei Yisrael, and therefore didn't really have the status of Beis Din HaGadol. Now, says Rav Chachamim, you have a machloikas between a psak that's emanating from a halachic Beis Din HaGadol of Rav Chachmei Yisrael against the psak emanating from a few yechidim. So, quite obvious who's going to win that one. Yeah, Beis Din HaGadol is obviously going to override any Yechidim. So therefore, Rav Chanan suggests that the Psak of the Beis Din HaGadol of the Chachmei Bavel has the koach to override the Psak of the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud Rishami. But again, whether you go down the route that the Rif presents in the name of the Gaonim, that you follow the Bavli of the Rishami because it's simply kibas right, it's just simply historically later and that's all. But you go down this new razzle-dazzle view of Rav Chanan about Tosha Bapeh and Beis Din HaGadol, etc. So you end up in the same place. You end up bottom line that the Psak of the Talmud Bavli basically carries the day. And this Sugya also carries the day. Therefore, the halacha, we're not concerned with the Rishami's conclusion. We're not concerned with that one day that appears in the Bavli also. You're not allowed to knock on the door. According to Rishami, you're not allowed to knock on the door to get into the house. You can't scream. You can't knock on the door because knocking on the door is Mashmiya Kol. We hold, you can't knock on the door to rhythm. You can't bump it up, to happy birthday or something that you can't do. But if you just want to knock that up to get somebody's attention, so we paskin that would be okay. Even though we paskin clearly that would be okay, there is a statement that appears in the Maharil. Maharil was a great rav in Germany already. At the period of Kufa, right, on the borderline between the late Rishonim, the very end of the period of the Rishonim, early Achronim. Right before the time of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So it's always a hot call. Where do you draw the line officially? Who's a Rishon, who's an Achron? But the Maharil But the Maharil had the following interesting chiddush. Maharil writes that even though you're allowed to knock on the door, you're not allowed to use what's called a kli hamiyuchad lekach. You're not allowed to use a utensil that's designated to make noise. So the most classic example is the door knocker. If you have a door knocker, that's what you make. That's what's called the door knocker for a reason, because they're knocking on the door. So you're not allowed to use a kli hamiyuchad lekach to make noise on Shabbos. Even though we don't accept the Yerushalmi that asas all knocking on the door, we hold it's a kli hamiyuchad lekach, it's a problem. So the question, where did that come from? But what's the source of that idea, this chumra of the Maharil that the later person quote la'alocha? So there are different versions of why the Maharil said what he said. What exactly is the concern? So there are those who wanted to say that it's almost like a gzeira. It's because you're using something that's a kli hamiyuchad lekach, so those are more prone to be involved in music. Again, a door knocker is not exactly one of the instruments in the symphony, but generally speaking, when you start to use kli hamiyuchad lekach, so it starts to become a little bit more likely that you're going to start to do things with more musical instrument, kind of music oriented, and that's going to ultimately be a violation of Shami Sach and Klishir. And again, this is starting to be a little bit of a stretch, it's starting to be a little bit of an extension. We have a general rule that in Gozing Zera Gzera, we don't generally like to make one Gzera against another Gzera, although the Gemara does have certain exceptions to that rule. So this sounds like almost like it's hard to call it a gezeira. That I'm not sure that my real means to say that this is really mikra din. Chazal don't really mention kli hamiyuchad lekach. So did he mean it's more of a later siyag, like a psaminag, that it's a siyag that was made in the later generations, otu instruments maybe. But the goal, the thrust of this, what do you call it, gezeira, minu, chumra, hidur, hanhag, whatever you want to call from the days of the Maharil. So it was almost an extension of this idea of Xeri Shemi Sakin Klishir. And again, a very, very, more extended matter. There are others who say that that's not really what's pshat, that in terms of Shemi Sakin Klishir, it really doesn't apply. If it's not derech music, it's not a problem. So what did the Maharil mean? So maybe it meant it's almost part of another area of the Hilchos Shabbos called Udu Dechol. There's a general prohibition which we find in Chazal itself, that there are certain things that Chazal prohibited on Shabbos just because they have a very weekday kind of appearance. They don't sit right with Shabbos. Now that idea of Udu Dechol, we don't want to give Shabbos a weekday appearance. This is, almost very, very loosely translated. Like when we were little kids, it's not Shabbos Dick, when your kids were, kids push and say, so why can't I go on the scooter and it's not Shabbos Dick. So when we were little, we used to always think, oh, not Shabbos Dick. That's the way of saying we're really allowed to do it. That's like wink, wink, you're allowed to do it. No. Not Shabbos Dick, because I did. There's a din called Udu Dechol. Udu Dechol is not made up by some Rebbe who wanted not to go on the scooter on Shabbos. Udu Dechol is a principle that appears in the Gemara in different contexts, and it's not absolutely objective, to know exactly. It's not always so easy to figure out what is Udu Dechol, what's not Udu Dechol. The notion of Udu Dechol has its roots in the Chumash itself. It has the roots in the Ramban, a very famous Ramban, in Parshas Emor. And the Ramban talks about how a person could theoretically keep all the Lamatas Melachas, not violate any real assert, and still be a flagrant violation of what Shabbos is supposed to be. So the Ramban has a beautiful illustration, or maybe not so beautiful. He depicts what a Shabbos deraisa would look like in theory. That guy's very machbid. He's not going to write. He's not going to light candles. He's not going to. His store's open. He's got goyim working for him. He's schlepping heavy furniture. He's doing things. He's got melchetzich legufas. He's got every kunz, every nuance, every. He's got every derabbanan down path. He's following derabbanan right and left. Chal Shabbos deraisa. He didn't do one of the lamedas malachas. So Ramban writes true, but he's still chal Shabbos deraisa because he violates Shabbos l'shem lekecha. The Torah says Shabbos l'shem. The Torah describes Shabbos kodesh. Shabbos was the day of kedusha. Shabbos l'shem lekecha. How can it be a Shabbos Hashem Lekecha and your store's open, business as usual? So the Ramban writes, there's more to Shabbos than just a Lamedas Melachos. That's a Divin HaTorah. So that idea that Shabbos has to give off the appearance of being a day that's Kedusha, it's got to look different from a weekday. So that's a Divin HaTorah. That's Shabbos Hashem. Now, what plugs into that? What is considered to be a flagrant violation? That gets a little bit tricky. Some of you may remember, I don't know if I've told it over in this context, but I've definitely told it over in the past, about the famous football game, Shiloh, on Shabbos. And years ago, I got a call from a madrich, that's why, that one of his NCS wires was a boy who was just becoming, you know, just started to become from Sabkum Shem Shabbos, and he was in a little bit of a challenge. And his grandfather had bought him, had bought tickets for the whole family to go to some college football game, apparently. I guess they played college football games on a Saturday. So they had bought, grandfather had bought tickets for everybody to come, and he very, very much wanted the grandson to come to the college football game. So the kid was, you know, really in a difficult predicament. On the other hand, I think it wouldn't even require driving. He was able to walk, and he wouldn't have to carry anything. And just sit in a football stadium, you know, on Shabbos. That's not exactly the most Shabbos to get atmosphere. So I explained to Madrich that even though it's a very, very difficult situation, I really think we have to try to explain to this young man that you can't have a football game on Shabbos. I'm like, no, and I invoked the Ramban. I quoted the Ramban. I said, it's, I know it's going to be very difficult, but we have to try to get this message across that, you know, the same way that we can't tell the child to be Michal Shabbos, you know, in deference to his grandparents, this is also Shemachal Shabbos. Again, I said it with a very, very, you know, heavy heart. I said very, very, very delicately. But I said, I think that this is something that we have to almost stand up for, that this just can't be Shem Shabbos and be in a college football game, and Shabbos doesn't mix. So I didn't know what the end of the story was. It was a story that I didn't know the boy was. I had no idea the student was, the interest why was. I knew the Madrich was, and so back 10 years ago. So a few years later, I was giving a shiur in Yeshiva Kotel. One of the Fisher knows very well, the late night, those late night Mishmar shiur, I used to, when I get to go to Israel, they usually get me there to give the late ones Thursday night. So it was 11, 12, going to give me shiur in Yeshiva Kotel. And the topic was something along the lines of like the spirit of Shabbos and Halach, something. I forgot what the exact topic was. So I was talking a lot about this Ramban. I was telling him about the Ramban and the Shabbos Hashem Lekecha, what the parameters are, is that really called Chol Shabbos, not Chol Shabbos, the prices, their abundance, etc. And I told him the story. And then after the shiur, so one of the young men of Luni Shiva Kotel came over to me and he told me that I'm the boy. He said, I'm the one you're telling the story about. So I said, so I was very tempted. So what happened in the end? So he said to me that his parents went up to that room and said his parents, he explained the story to his parents. His parents were not from. And his parents explained to the grandfather that this is going to be something that's going to be uncomfortable for the young man, and he should just be respectful. And kachavan, it ended all's well that ends well. I didn't ask him to win the game, I don't think that was so important, but all's well that ends well. So the Ramban, that's Umdu Duchol. So Umdu Duchol is a real aspect of Hashanah. So some Achavarim want to say, that's what my room was driving at. When you have a clear miyuchad lekach, it's like very not Shabbistic. So somehow, we can't pinpoint and say, it's not a deraisa, it's not even derabon, it doesn't sit well, it doesn't look right at Hashanah. So my life, I mean, at the end of the day, whether you want to call it a gezeira shem yisak b'lishir, an extended gezeira shem yisak b'lishir, or whether you want to call it a ruta d'chol, at the end of the day, the post can quote this ma'ril l'halocha. So what's the difference? What's the practical difference? So one practical difference may be, there are some who want to argue that whenever you have something that's awesome and shum ruta d'chol, maybe if I have a Shabbos knocker, get a special knocker that I don't use this knocker the whole week. This is the Shabbos knocker, and it says on the Shabbos kedush on it. So a special Shabbos knocker, then you could argue that's antithesis of the chol. Forget it. I'm making a demarcation. I only use this on Shabbos. So even though it's technically it's going to be yuchad lekach, but it's going to be mutter. If you hold the issur results of the chol, then you could probably justify it based on that. If you hold the issur is based on it's really an extension of the gezeira shem yisak b'lishir, it's also making Shabbos marker, Shabbos knocker is not going to make things any better. There's another interesting possible nafkamina ladina. Basically, Gemara Nevin tells us a fascinating postscript to the machlekes about whether the issur applies only derech shir or not. So there was one day, I think it was Ulam, I'm not mistaken, who held that the issur applies even if it's not derech shir. So the Gemara tells a story that Amoira once came home Friday night and he was calling his wife and his kids to open the door for him. It's time to make Yiddish. As it says in Kovi and Koshev, no, nobody heard. They fell asleep. I guess he must have stayed in the base medish a little bit too late on Friday night. And time he came home, his wife was sleeping. His kids were sleeping. But it doesn't tell us whether the Mekiddush had the suit or not. That part is left out. But Lemaisa didn't hear him. So he felt very bad. So he went outside. He stayed outside and he laid down in front of his house. He went to sleep. That was it. He slept in the street. So it's clear from the Gemara. The Gemara said, we don't pass like that. I mean, again, according to the Bible, we don't pass like that story because we pass in your ladder knock on the door. So it's not there, Shia. So you see from that Gemara that according to his opinion, that you're really not allowed to knock on the door, because even if it's not Derech Shear, even if it's going to lead to a tremendous tsar, that's a pretty big tsar. You sleep on the porch of your house the entire night. That's no doubt not the most comfortable, fulfillment of Erech Shabbos. What are you going to do? Tough luck. So you see from that Gemara that you're not going to violate a Nisr because it's not comfortable. Forget about Nisr Derech. Nisr Derabon. You know, the fact that it's uncomfortable, that doesn't sanction violating Yisur. It's a very, very famous story. I forget already who it was. I remember person ended up spent the whole Shabbos in the bathroom because they went in some place or something where the lights were whatever they were, automatic, whatever it was. They were of the opinion that if you open the door and it turns on the light, off the light, they felt that was a nisa. I'm not saying that we necessarily hold like that. You can give them different cheshbonos, but if you hold it, it's mamash osur. So it's osur. It's going to be very uncomfortable to sit in the bathroom for 20. Nope. Being uncomfortable is not a matter per se. There are certain times Chazal lifted certain isur derabanan b'chum tzara guf, very significant tzara. A person just is not comfortable. That's not in itself a matter to do isur. So this amira felt that just the fact he's going to miss a good night's sleep, that's not a matter to do an isur derabanan. So the place can say, that what would it then be for us? So we don't pass like that Gemara. We pass in that of Shiloh Derech Shear, it's mutter. But if it's Klim Yuchel Kach, it's also. So what if the only way to get people not hearing, they're not hearing the knock on the door, the only way they would hear you if you have a fighting chance with the knocker. So would you be permitted to violate this Maharil, the Mokom Tsar, and Godel? So if you hold it's Maharil, held it's Mamashi Gezeira, it's part of the Gezeira, there are Shem Yisan Klei Shear. Tough. Same way the Gemara says that Amira wouldn't violate the Yisr Derabanan, even though it was uncomfortable. We wouldn't be able to violate the Yisr Derabanan either. But if you hold it, the whole Yisr was only out of the Dechol. So of the Dechol, the Gemara itself has certain kulos about of the Dechol when it otherwise is going to enhance Shabbos. Where it talks about doing things in of the Dechol passed in the Makom Mitzvah, other things like things like Tirchei Deseira. The Gemara says at the end of the Shabbos, you're not allowed to schlep heavy things in Shabbos. Nothing we carry inside the house, you're not allowed to carry heavy things. So the Mishnah says that let's say you have to clear away a place for people to sit and learn, for the shul to daven, so you have to move the furniture, you got to move the tables, you got to, so that's okay. That enhances the Shabbos. That's the Tzorcha Mitzvah. So when you're dealing with Mamashi Surim, the Isis, and the Rabbanans, and Gezeira, so then those are generally not going to lift those necessarily from a Mitzvah. But when you're dealing with things that are not Isurim, but there's Atzvam, they're just because they're detracting from the spirit of Shabbos. So forget maybe doing things in Mokom Pitzvah will enhance the spirit of Shabbos for that. You can override of the Duchol. So perhaps Bisman Azeh, if a guy is at the expense of having to sleep in the street all night, he wants to use the knocker, maybe we could sanction that. So just because the Gemara says it's Asur, that meant that day in the Gemara, well, that it was a real Nisr Derabanan. Yo, it's not a real Nisr, it's just out of the Duchol. So then there may be grounds to deal with it. So again, this whole Maharil doesn't appear in the Gemara. All an extension of what says in the Gemara. The Ika Mikra didn't we task him that if it's not Derech Shear, it's Mutar. Now for Bichayim, the Maharil said it clearly, Yufa Lekacha would be a problem. And that's become the accepted practice today as well. It's based on this Maharil that a whole Shaila emerged, post him raised, that we don't have this in our shul, but some shuls have this, the bells on the Sefer Torah. So can you, many of them have nice fancy silver crowns with the bell and the Maiselach. So can you, when you take out the Sefer Torah, so you're going to walk around and then it's going to start to ring the bells. There are some shuls, I haven't seen this, but there are some shuls where bells on the parochas in the shul. I've never seen this, but the person described some of the shuls in Europe probably have these little silver bells on the parochas. It's like the kongol, this week's Pasha, the tzapa, you had bells in the bottom of the meal. So what's it then? Can you open up during Kaddish and Shabbos? Can you walk around the Sefer Torah and Shabbos? It's going to make noise. So one can argue, well, we paskin if it's Shalom B'derech Shear, so then it's okay. We paskin, it's basically mutter. The only problem is bells are kliyam yuchalakach. Bells are made to make music. So even though I personally am not using it to make music, if I'm playing the bells, I want to play, that's my instrument in the orchestra, so that'll be a problem. But if I'm not playing the bell out music, I'm just playing the bell, I'm walking with the Sefer Torah and it's just making noise, it's not making a musical noise, it's not making a shear. So then the only way we can ask for it is based on the Maharil of Klim Yuchalakach. So should that pose a problem or not? So maybe you could argue it's the Chavra Torah, it's Kavan Mitzvah, so maybe it's not. Or there are different reasons, some posts have different etzes to suggest different etzes. So some posts can write, it's like a shtickle dover shem is Kavan. It's not really my plan. I want to take out the Sefer Torah. I'm not interested in making the bells ring. So It's very hard to invoke those terms because we're not dealing with a real bona fide issue in the first place. So some people are a little bit more makeup. They said that Nishkafel is not so terrible because anyway, you're not being mechaving so terribly l'shei Mashiach. So the Magen Avraham quotes a possible kula. Those possible were mamash people opposed to these. And the Magen Avraham quotes a possible kula based on the following. It's really going to segue to the next part of our topic about this sugya. That there is a very famous Tosfos in the end of Maseches Beitza, where Tosfos talks about some of the Isurim Derabban of Shem Yisrael and Kli Shiur, some of the musical gezeiros Derabbanan, how much of that applies Bizman Hazeh. Why shouldn't it apply Bizman Hazeh? So Tosfos makes the observation that most of us don't know how to be Maseches and Kli Shiur. I won't take a survey of who's on the call right now, but I imagine most people here are not professional, tuning things. I'm not the most musical person altogether, but even those people who are musical, most people don't know how to tune the piano, don't know how to the guitars, maybe, I don't know. Most people don't know how to, if your flute would break, I'm not sure most people would know what to do about it. So most of us don't have those skills of being Bistak and Klesher anymore. So Tosfos quotes a Svar, and says, that maybe whatever was prohibited because of Shem Yisrael Klishir, maybe it doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh, because we're not Bekiyim B'Tikun Klishir. So the Magen Avraham quotes that text and says, maybe that's the reason why many of the shuls are made to have the bells go off on the Sefer on the Pareches, because we don't take this so seriously with Zman Hazeh. Anyway, we don't know how to be Yisrael Klishir, so maybe the whole Gezerah doesn't apply. So that's a very, very loaded statement that the Magen Avraham is saying as a Limud Zchus, because first of all, the Tosfos itself is very, very loaded. That Tosfos is a very, very controversial Tosfos. What exactly Tosfos said and what the problems of Tosfos are, because there are really two issues in that Tosfos. Issue number one is just a very basic premise that Tosfos has, that because the reason doesn't apply, therefore the din doesn't apply, so that doesn't always follow suit. There are many, many Isurim Derabbanan that the reason no longer applies and the Isur still has not been lifted. So, that's a very, very controversial statement, what Tosfos even meant. So Tosfos didn't mean it across the board. It's clear there are certain Isurim Derabbanan that are still intact, even though the reason is long gone. So what did Tosfos mean exactly? And then second of all, we're not even sure whether we pass like the Tosfos. Tosfos is a big Kiddush. It's not even clear in Shulchan Aruch whether we follow the Tosfos. So we're not sure what Tosfos meant, when the Issa falls off, when it doesn't fall off. And we're not sure whether we accept this Halacha. And then the third question is, we're not sure that even if we're going to accept this Tosfos, that the Shem Yisrael and Kli Shiur doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh, that applies to the entire Gezerah, the entire Hakol Miko Kol, the entire Gezerah, Shem Yisrael and Kli Shiur is non-existent as Zman Hazeh. Is that really true? Did anybody say that? If that's the case, why can't I play the piano today? Why can't I play my guitar today? Forget about my kumzitz on Motzei Shabbos, my kumzitz for lunch. What's wrong playing guitar? Well, I'm a loch involved in playing guitar. So the whole reason why I can't play the guitar is Shem Yisrael and Kli Shiur. But the Balei Tosfos said you can play the guitar as well as that. That doesn't seem to be true. Nobody seems to say that. So we're not sure what Tosfos meant. So Tosfos said some very cryptic statement about Shem Yisrael and Kli Shiur not being known as man is there. We're not sure Manishtan this Gezerah from other Gezerahs Rabbanan. We're not sure we'll be Paskin like this Tosfos. And even according to Tosfos, we're not sure to what extent they said this. Otherwise, we have complete and total clarity in the entire sugya. So once we figure out what in the world Tosfos meant or didn't mean, then we can begin to try to figure out how that, no pun intended, plays out, how that's going to imply, how that's going to, what implications that's going to have for the case of the Sefer Torah. So the evidence is the case of the Bell Sefer Torah is almost the least of our problems. Most shuls don't even have them. Many shuls don't even have those anymore. But this has just opened up a very, very loaded question. How much of Shem Yisrael Kli Shiur doesn't apply? So here, we spent a shiur and a half talking about the Gezerah Shem Yisrael Kli Shiur, and now Tosfos is potentially throwing this Gezerah out the window. So we're going to have to tone down this Tosfos significantly to figure out what Tosfos said and how we pass it like and what the parameters of that Tosfos are. Mm-hmm. So next week, we'll try to put the final touches on this part of Shem Yisrael Kli Shiur. And we have one or two last things related to Magma Pathish, and then I think we can almost even pick a seam on the Malachas.
Yeah, that's all right.